How many of us were told that pursuing a career in the arts was just a pipe dream? Wandering Bud founder Riley Brain proved that it's possible. In 2016, she began making artful ceramic smoking accessories in the evenings after her job as an elementary school music teacher. Today, her small business employs five fellow women artists making bubblers, bongs, pipes, and more in Wandering Bud's Kansas City studio. Wandering Bud bubblers offer a smooth, cool hit in the palm of your hand, and with dreamy finishes like Mother of Pearl and 22-karat gold luster, you'll want to show your bubbler off as a bud vase or a sculptural art object when you're not using it. Visit wanderingbud.com to find your dream pipe.
Hi, this is Menle Golakai Agri.
And this is Lauren Yoshiko, and you're listening to Broccoli Talk, a podcast for cannabis lovers. This month, though,
y'all,
damn, how is everyone doing? I know we have a lot of people that listen that are around and in the industry and a lot of people who aren't. But I think for everybody, it's also just like really chaotic energy all month. And it's been a sprint for us in the weed community. I was trying to put it into words, and it's like for weed writers, it is like Black Friday and Christmas and Labor Day mattress sales, like all in one, because it's the one time of year that like every media outlet is like, oh yeah, shit, we should do something about weed in April. And all the regular people who contribute to weed are doing like a big 420 package. And personally, like I will say it's cool because I get to see a little bit of the progress of weed every 420, like looking at the editors that reach out. It's like says something like, oh, like last year I heard from a mom magazine, which was really cool, like something for mothers to guide gummies. And that was big. And then this year I heard from Condé Nast Traveler for the first time. And I was like, you know what? Good for y'all. And they wanted something more than like a travel roundup. They wanted like a truly good, interesting story on the way women are creating space for destination experiences. And it, like, okay, that shows progress. But yeah, I've been booked, busy, burnt out, and ready to burn several down on 420. We're recording it the week prior. How is it going for you, Menle? Are you alive?
Lordy, I don't know. Have I ever been? Is this not all a simulation?
TBD.
It has been a wild month for cannabis writers, like you're saying, for business owners, for industry girls. Like, it's just been a lot, but we love to see it. We love the abundance. I think, you know, my half-assed astrology report, I think with Jupiter and Neptune sort of convening in Pisces, apparently this hasn't happened since the 1800s.
Makes me feel slightly better.
And, you know, you think about that time for, at least for basic bitch people who didn't really have maybe like an indigenous practice of magic or spirituality, that was really coming to the forefront, I think, to a lot of folks in the 1800s. You know, there were a lot of seances, there were a lot of like people experimenting with weed, with opioids. So it seems like a very fitting moment. And there's been a lot, like a lot of energy, a lot happening. But also, I think this boost in sort of like a very cosmic, abundant, albeit chaotic moment. You know, in terms of my actual real life, everyday grind, hustle, I've just been scheming a 420 kind of womb weed revolution campaign for Chula. We shot it in my house, or in my apartment, rather. I do not have a house. I will have a house, though, if we are using this this sort of conjunction in Pisces to manifest. I'm going to have a house. I'm going to have a garden. But we shot, and it was hectic. I did hair, makeup, fucking styling, like fake blood out of beets.
Fun. Oh my God.
And it was fun. We shot it and we really wanted to, I think this is something beyond like Chula as the brand, but make 420 feel like less of an adolescent kind of white boy stoner holiday and more of an intentional moment to kind of disrupt the narrative and celebrate how weed really helps our wombs, right? How it relieves us from period pain and PMS and menopause and fuck, even life, you know? And I'm clearly very excited about this.
Oh, I love this radical energy. Yes. So in this weedy of weediest months of the year of April, we're doing Broccoli Talks First 420 Hotline, woo-hoo! And I am so excited about it. Thank you so much to everybody who submitted a question, because this was just sort of like an idea and we weren't 100% sure how it would work or what it would work or what people even want to know or if they want to know anything. And y'all do have some questions and I am excited to answer them. Thank you to all of our precious Stony listeners.
Yeah, we actually heard from folks in Liberia, from LA, Paris, London, New York, basically all over the world. But also shout out to our small town stoners.
Yes, 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 yes. And yeah, oh my gosh, there's absolutely things happening in cities big and small. And you guys sent in questions about getting into the industry, advice for first-time plant parents, favorite weedy movies, dream smoke circles, pretty much our dream prompts.
So we're basically here to answer your inquiries, break down the trends, and celebrate this super stony time of year by diving into topics that you care about.
I am ready.
Let's get it.
We're dialing into the 420 hotline right now.
Hello, thank you for calling the Broccoli Talk 420 hotline. Please leave your burning question after the beep.
That is so
amazing.
Good. That is so good.
Okay, what's our first listener question?
So our first listener question is from Max Lee from Philly, and they ask, what is your dream smoke circle with people dead or alive? And what are you smoking out of?
Truly just the best prompt. Thank God someone asked this question.
So I would say as far as what I'm smoking out of, it will probably always and forever just be rolling paper. But the circle is one that I think is very special. One person would be my paternal great-grandmother, Martha Freeman. She actually was my grandfather's mother, but raised my mom, was an educator, lived on a chicken farm in Liberia. It would be such a trip to just smoke one down with her and really experience like what life was like through her lens. The second is a tie between Jerry Garcia and Rihanna. I know it's random,
but it like makes perfect sense.
You know what I mean? It's like me, if I were to spawn out of two people, maybe that's what it would be like. Maybe those are my parents. I'm sorry, Rihanna, that you have to sleep with Jerry Garcia.
I've never heard a more logical statement in my entire life. No shade to Rihanna. Jerry would be so lucky.
Jerry Bear. Oh, I just think, first of all, their voices, the connection that I think a lot of us have had to their music and both cannabis culture is just massive. It goes beyond looks and who they are, but really, I think on a spiritual plane.
Like the fabric of our weed culture.
Yeah. And I also think, lastly, Octavia Butler, so trippy. What a vast mind.
Hell yes. Oh my God.
Right? I mean, I don't really know if Octavia consumed cannabis, but I think just understanding what it's like to grow up as a poor, black, shy person has created so many places for us to exist in the world, you know, in terms of, again, spiritual planes, but also kind of these cult classics. Really, when you think about cults and communities and storytelling. And so anyway, that would be the rotation, but I'm excited to hear yours.
I know that this is definitely affected by things I've been watching and reading lately. Let's like, I feel like if you asked me this question throughout the year, I'd have different groups depending on the season and vibe.
Right.
I definitely include SZA in all variations, similar to your comment about Jerry and Rihanna. It just like makes sense to me. Like I already feel like I've been smoking with SZA for years because of her music and like her like openness and vulnerability. So I can just like see her doing quite well in any smoking circle. And then, okay, at first I was thinking Donald Glover.
Ooh.
Because I love talking about heavy shit. I love talking about art and music and movies, and I know he's probably going to have opinions about all. And then I was like, you know what? I bet Donald Glover is one of those very creative people that, like, doesn't really smoke weed. I don't really know that, but in my mind I was like, I wonder if he doesn't actually smoke weed.
You think in Atlanta it's fake? It's like a prop?
No, he does smoke weed. And I think this is like a cinematic sesh. So I'm imagining Donald Glover and or Danny McBride. Mm. And I know that's like a wildly different vibe,
no.
But it's all about the love of good, weird art. Because if you think about Atlanta and like Vice Principals, those are not in like vastly different universes as far as like a kind of quirky comedic tone and like a clear knowledge of just with the appreciating like the strangeness of the mundane.
Right.
Like how weird regular life is. I think those that's my vibe.
I love that.
And then I'm also going to throw an old late white dude in the mix with Roger Ebert.
Oh.
Because I recently read his 1993 movie review of The Joy Luck Club and was just like crying the whole time because he was making like the most honorable statement for like, this is what American cinema should be. Like, it shouldn't be this division between foreign cinema and non-white actors and then American cinema with all white actors. And right. It's just like, he was so ahead of his time. He is the reason we have movie reviews, like, as a mainstream part of culture.
And genre of writing, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, he's fought so hard to get exposure of all kinds of filmmakers from all over the world. And looking into more of his life, I was just like, wow, like, he really was a positive force in expanding American audiences' horizons. So I feel like between Donald, Danny, and Roger, and then me and SZA just rolling blunts and joints the entire time, it would be the most fun conversation about, like, our favorite movies, our least favorite movies, movies we should write together. That's the one.
I definitely hear the movies we should write together dialogue, like, playing in my head. I love that.
It'd be some weird shit, but it might be great.
Yeah.
Okay, our next question. Ya from Liberia asks, as a young Black woman and cannabis lover, I would love to be more open about my love for the plant and its benefits. How do I grow past the fear of judgment of others, especially in Africa?
Wow, Ya, that's a really... It's a great question. It's expansive. I think through my personal experience as a child of African parents, I understand exactly how the fear of judgment can hinder you from being able to focus on your career in cannabis. But I will say that luckily the times are changing and there are more and more even African aunties who understand the benefits of cannabis, especially I think CBD and other hemp cannabinoids. But what I've found really to be a great tool in sort of growing past that fear is to look to the research and the peer-reviewed articles and the books and even the anecdotal evidence that shows how cannabis benefits our lives or why you enjoy cannabis, why you find benefits from it. I think kind of leaning into that education aspect and leading by example, I guess you could say, is a really beautiful way for family to come around, you know. With so many things in life, no one really wants to be preached at. No one wants to be told what to do or be belittled. And remember that it's a process. It's an evolution. Being patient and being gentle both with yourself and with your community will hopefully go a long way.
And Ya also said that she wanted to say, Menly, that she loves your fire, energy, and boldness when it comes to cannabis.
Aww.
You are an inspiration to many, which I know is true. She wanted to know what have been some major challenges that you've had to overcome to get to where you are now.
Yeah, you know, there are so many challenges. We can both attest to that in the industry. And I do not say this to scare anyone, but just in full transparency, the barriers are great. But one of the most challenging, I think, that I've been able to overcome with the help of community, with my co-founder, with networking, with being savvy, are the laws, right? The FDA restrictions, the green taxes that are really targeted towards cannabis companies. Those are very challenging. I think I've been able to, again, through community, find a way through them and still working on it, still going through it, but it can be done.
It can be done. You're living proof.
Absolutely. So, Lauren, we've got another question for you. Deanie from NYC asks, I'm interested in starting a cannabis-related business, but the market seems very saturated. Are there still areas of opportunity for small players? And if so, which areas should I be looking at?
So, Deanie, I definitely understand that sentiment. I look around on the West Coast and often will just be like, okay, everything's been done. We're all too late.
Right.
The stage is set. it's over, game over. And then I turn around and, like, for example, right now, like, every, like, consumption lounge and public event and, like, recurring weed party in Portland has pretty much shut down. Like, almost nothing survived COVID, and it's a completely empty space right now. Like, a new person could open up right now and dominate, be a huge cultural figure in Portland scene. And we're a mature market that's, like, way older than New York. So what I have to say to you is, actually, you are in the complete right place at the right time. It's not too late. It's not too saturated. As long as you're not trying to grow or run a dispensary, that game right. is a little more dicey. And yeah, you're going to have to partner with some people that probably already have feet in the door. However, doing something less directly related to the plant in this space is the ticket right now. It will allow you to start small and be nimble and start with maybe even just what you have. I was just talking with Jess of Copper House, the Airbnb in Detroit, and she said the most beautiful sentence. She was like, is this what I expected? Like, did I want to be a hospitality person in cannabis? Not necessarily, but I was able to meet everyone I needed to meet to get into this business in my living room. And that's all I had at the time was my living room. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of what it's about. Like, I guarantee you are probably somebody who does have enough skills or interests that you could probably develop your own niche with what you got right now. And it may not be the scale of what you're looking for, but starting small is exactly kind of what you want to be doing. And as far as niches, I would say it sounds like there's a lot of culinary pop-ups like already happening in New York, and it's going to be more competitive to get people to pay like $30 to go to a weed dinner. But outside of that, you could try anything. I think of Nomster Nails was a service that popped up in Portland, and she pretty much was just visiting people for like at-home manicures, but she made it this whole like cannabis-friendly experience, and she got so much press. She was written up all over the place. She was a part of like every weed event for a few years, and all she was doing was just like implementing her nail tech services to be something in the weed-friendly space and something that she could totally control and keep in people's residences, which like followed all the laws. So you got this, I think. You just think about what your niche would look like. Our next question comes from abroad. I apologize for mispronouncing this name, but I'm going to say Toshego from South Africa asks, how does one begin to build a brand with limited funding and in a country that hasn't yet legalized cannabis? It's slowly on the way. People can grow for private use and CBD products are sold legally. Interesting.
I mean, this is sticky and it really depends on the country, no? But I think speaking particularly to South Africa, like you're saying, where cannabis is grown and I believe also mostly exported, I would consider looking for funding and looking for community almost in tandem. Because of the exportation, you'll find that various businesses in the US and Canada and even Europe are looking for alliances and looking for collaboration, I think, of all different types. Mm-hmm. You might be surprised by how much value I think there is in being a South African cannabis company. It's one of the, I think, biggest ones on the continent and definitely has, again, huge exporting powers. It's also important to work within the community locally, but think globally in this situation. It seems like you're already on the right track by being in the Broccoliverse and community, right? We are very geographically diverse and also, I think, diverse when it comes to the different types of skills and business within the cannabis space. So keep doing that. I believe that there is a organization called Pan-African Hemp. I don't know if you're looking specifically for hemp cannabinoid-based products, but I think they would be a great organization. They focus mainly on advocacy and investment for hemp on the continent, of course. And there's also the Cannabis Development Council of South Africa. You know, see what they say, poke them. A lot of times it's really just flirting on Instagram, on, you know, Twitter, et cetera, and really finding out, first of all, if there's someone that you want to align with and if they have those resources.
You don't have to have a product yet necessarily, too. Like, don't feel tied to the law to start building a brand. If you have content or interest, or if you even just start writing blogs or connecting with other people, you can start building a brand without a product because That's what everybody does, I feel like. Everybody's starting an Instagram account and launching a t-shirt.
Which is so weird. I wish I would have done that. Like, why didn't I do that? It's great to just connect to community, like Lauren's saying, and really see what comes out of that rather than being so fixated on what exactly that brand looks like.
Yeah, because it might help you decide where to go from there.
Yeah, and we're excited to see where things go from there for you.
Yeah, tell us what happens next for sure. What's in your wellness toolkit? How about headache rollers, pillow mists, intimacy oils, and transdermal patches from Ruby Mary Botanicals? Ruby Mary creates CBD tools for the many cycles of life, from menstruation to menopause. One essential is the Fixer, a transdermal patch you wear on your skin to help with cramps and muscle pain. The Fixer delivers CBD topically like a balm or salve, except you only have to apply it once for long-lasting relief. And Ruby Mary uses only hemp that is certified DEM pure, a high standard for clean cultivation practices. That means they're confident about delivering the highest quality full-spectrum CBD from reliable sources. When your body is going through a shift, look for tools at rubymarybotanicals.com. Use the code BROCCOLIBUDDY for 20% off any purchase of $50 or more. Ruby Mary Botanicals, for the many cycles of life.
If you've got a business that needs help running the numbers, let Alice and Fran be your guide. This women-owned firm offers personalized virtual controller and fractional CFO services for creative businesses. Alice and Fran is named after the founder's two grandmothers, Alice, a sassy bargain shopper, and Fran, a no-nonsense mother of seven. Alice and Fran brings a bit of both of their spirits to creatively strategize for sustainable growth and long-term profitability, empowering business owners to make data-driven decisions. Whether you want to stay small or scale, investing in financial management is key. That's why Alice and Fran analyzes, translates, and reports the numbers so that you can focus on what you love, building your business. Visit aliceandfran.com to schedule a complimentary discovery call. So we've got a question for you, Lauren. Gabby from Kansas City, Missouri wants to know, how do you find your proper dosage when smoking? Or does it depend on the time, the place, the strain? Gabby says that they've been struggling to find the perfect day-to-day dosage where I still feel productive, but take the edge off.
Yeah, I mean, this is the billion-dollar question. Like, this is it. And the sad thing is science research just has not caught up with weed. And we truly can't say how one strain or product will affect a particular person, straight up. Like, there's so many projects that are like an app where users submit data and reviews so that they can aggregate to tell you what product's going to work for you. And that's it. Like, it's really... it's like reading other people's takes on things, but you don't know what that person's body is like. You don't know what they ate that day. So even reviews are kind of tricky. And to answer the early part of your question, dosage totally depends on time, place, and strain. I know that's like a totally overwhelming not answer, but the real answer is it is all about experimentation. It's like, we have to run our own clinical trials on ourselves, which yeah. can be done. Like, it's overwhelming, and it sucks that, to be completely honest and accurate, there is no guide and there is no accurate like way of knowing what could work. But what will work is you paying attention to the things that work for you and is exhibit like the effects you're looking for. And when that happens, so you talked about wanting that kind of productive, buzzy feeling, but a little relaxed. Like, if you ever get a little hint of what you're looking for and you're like, yep, this is it. This is it, what I'm feeling right now. Write everything down about that product. Like, note the farm, the extraction process, dominant terpenes, cannabinoid content, smell it. Understanding the different factors that make that is going to help lead you to other products that might share some of those common factors. And then you can really start figuring out, like, okay, this product was these kind of terpenes dominant. And if you try a different product with the same kind of dominant terpenes and feel the same desirable effects, then you're on the right track. And now all of a sudden, you know to look for those terpenes when you're shopping. Like, for example, in Oregon, I get to smell flower. It's really nice. And that's like how I shop for weed. I'll ask about genetics and farms, but ultimately I know a certain, I don't know, assortment of notes that I will find in my favorite strains that I have tried to memorize. And I don't even know what the terpenes are, to be honest. Like, I could be better about this, but I can tell, like, if it doesn't have this like funky, cushy smell that you find in like the really dank cookie blends or like GMO, like that's what I'm typically looking for. And if I don't smell it, or if it's something that's like way more citrusy or way more skunky, I'm almost always like, nope, that didn't do what I needed it to do for me. So use your nose and really use your body. Your body is your lab, and cheers to you. And we're just lucky that this plant is so safe that we can experiment with so many different products, and it's not like a scary journey that it's just going to be a matter of getting a little more stoned than you wanted. Did you want to add anything to that, Menle?
Using your body as a lab is incredible, and making sure you have tools with you in that lab that are going to be helpful, like maybe CBD or a hemp cannabinoid to really kind of help cut the edge.
Yeah,
if you are experimenting with THC dominant strains, some soda water, Advil, you know, a cold shower, some good tunes, like having your lab really set up, I think, is a fun and also informative place to explore.
All right, our next question, we've got actually one for each of us. So Iris from Northampton, Massachusetts, thank you. So first, Menle, any other African food you'd like to try dosing? She is Togolese, so the weed and fufu and soup combo makes her very happy. Do you have any recipes for her?
You know, that's in the second book that is going to be written when I'm 50 in 10 years. 11 years, actually. Honestly, I've infused jollof rice before, but I have been jonesing to really infuse palm butter and serve it with fufu. And, you know, having family, again, both from Liberia and Ghana, fufu and palm butter are so celebrated and probably, for me, my personal taste bud, my favorite dish. I'm salivating right now, but also, I'll just take a step back too, and for those of you who don't know what palm butter is, it is essentially this very thick and delicious sauce made by usually boiling or steaming and grinding palm nuts. And these nuts are kind of the flower from a very specific type of species of palm tree. And so anyway, you create this very smooth, buttery kind of, you could even say like mole texture. Called moambe. That would be the most ideal infusion meal. And once that recipe is written, I'm going to send this to you, Iris. We are going to do like a little workshop together on Zoom or something and turn all of our family members out, because this is going to be delicious and they're going to be high. Anyway, the second question for Lauren is, what is the most interesting thing you see coming out of Mass these days? I feel like New York City and Maine are getting way more love on the East Coast, and hoping that Massachusetts isn't completely fumbling the bag. Thanks, friends.
Oh, man. No, from what I hear, business is not lagging in Massachusetts. And I don't think the bag has been fumbled as much as the local media coverage has ignored what cool things are happening, because I think things are often popping. Like, I know an Oregon brand that launched out there and is super happy about it, which impressed me and said a lot, because the brand in mind is like a very mature product with lower doses of THC. So if stuff like that is flying off the shelves, this market's going to be cool as hell, I think, and be more interested in more nuanced stuff than just like getting blasted by the highest possible THC vape pen or whatever, twax joint. Also in the dispensary scene, dispensaries are so boring for the most part. Like on the West Coast, there's like a handful of people that are doing something interesting other than just like expensive interior design and have like a vibe or a cool experience inside. But it's still really far and few between. And I was stoked to hear that, I think it's in Boston, but there's a spot called Seed Dispensary, and they have a whole Social Justice Cannabis Museum inside, like a good museum with exhibits and a dispensary where, I mean, we all talk about like, wow, it's crazy. I can buy this and walk outside and people are in jail. Like that will be a very visual reminder for guests.
Yeah.
On the other end of the spectrum, a hotspot of bougie dispensaries in, I don't know Massachusetts at all, but the Great Barrington area. What a dramatic name. But I have seen pictures of spots that we're talking like celebrity architects, crazy stuff. Like I think it's called Farnsworth Fine Cannabis. There's a spot called Rebel that's like very New York with extremely expensive leather stash bags that look very pretty. But yeah, totally different. I'm impressed with actually, I think some things are popping and they just aren't getting the love they deserve yet. Continuing in the East, we've got a question from Brooklyn. So Reb has a homegrown question. What advice would you give to first-time cannabis plant parents? And they're growing from seeds.
Cannabis as a plant species is so generous and really allows for you to, you know, make some mistakes, I think, especially starting out. So remember that and keep that in mind.
Yeah, this plant wants to grow.
Yeah, and I think one of the most important aspects, too, is to look to agriculture that already exists, right? I think there are so many parallels when it comes to growing certain vegetables and plants, even when you think of, like, permaculture and, you know, what kind of goes well with cannabis when you're growing it. Look to those because, essentially, again, this is a plant that wants to grow. When you start it from seed as a seedling, it's also very resilient. It wants nutrients. It wants light. It wants to grow, and it will grow for you. There's a really great Leafly article actually on growing and also on harvesting that I send to people all the time when they ask me. I should just write a book maybe about it. That'll take another 10 years. But it's a really, really comprehensive article because it shows images. It has diagrams. It allows you to click out to other articles and other YouTube videos that really can give you that nitty-gritty advice that you need. Like, I will say this again. When I started growing weed, I couldn't even like whisper it over my flip phone, you know, because that's how essentially scary and dangerous it could have been had the feds been listening. Yes, there was some paranoia, but, you know, it's your life. And so we have, again, all these tools where you can literally type in any question that comes to mind when you think about growing cannabis and get a pretty solid answer. Be confident. Plants want to grow for you. And it's always just such a beautiful experience. So hopefully that's helpful. But if you have more questions, feel free to ask us individually as well.
Yeah, she wants to grow. That's definitely part of it. Like, I didn't know what I was doing, but we kind of grew great weed that year. Like, it was Southern Oregon sun, good soil, and the plants were like, yeah, this, we don't need too much more than this, y'all. We've got some very fun ones coming up. So Cam from Winnipeg, Canada wants to know, desert island, you can only smoke one strain. What's it going to be?
Oof. First of all, Cam, this is a great question. I would have to go with Sour Diesel. Sour Diesel is a sativa cross between Chemdog and Super Skunk. Some people say Headband, but like that's debatable. But it's, for me at least, dreamy, cerebral, very fast acting, energizing. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite strains, and I actually grew it almost exclusively for like 6 years because all the hype beasts loved it in New York in the early 2000s. So we were just growing Sour D all day, every day. And I love growing it. It's tall, it's chunky, but it's also airy. So like, I'm thinking right back to this desert island. So like, if we're growing it, if we've smoked it all, we've got some seeds and we're growing it, it's going to be less susceptible to mold. It's going to be less susceptible to, you know, any sort of like pest in this island because it just has that air and that ventilation, which is always good for nugs. You know, that's what I would go with. What about you, Lauren?
Sour Diesel is so good. I haven't had Sour Diesel, like a good Sour Diesel in a while.
So good.
Now that I think about it, I think one of the craziest strains I smoked that I haven't seen for a really long time that has left an incredible impression was this cross between Sour Diesel and Albert Walker.
Oh, interesting.
And it was called Sour Al.
What?
Which I also just loved as a name. I need to look into that. I'm going to do a deep dive on that. Try to find if that grower.
What's Albert Walker? Is it like a kush? Is it short? A shorty?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
It was heavier and it was a really interesting flavor. But that sour diesel bump, I love that. That give me that little Adderall buzz. For the longest time, and even though I really like a buzzy, uppy feeling, I think because of my mental dynamics, I need a heavier strain that gives me that like stupid happy feeling. Like I really, the gigglies, I need that like pure happy, everything is a joy, walking Aww. Through the grocery store is Disneyland energy.
It is though, really.
yeah, for real. So for a long time, there was this cherry kush in Portland that was just perfect to me. It was really interesting flavor. It had that funky, mossy funk that I like. Somebody told me kush and Girl Scout cookies smells like grandma's purse or moldy basement, but I refuse to use such.
It gives like some sort of bready vibe, right?
Oh, interesting. Honestly, I'm yes, no. I think that's actually a really accurate way and one that I rarely do. I'm terrible at describing strains, by the
way.
Like, you need to have a culinary palate. You need to have like culinary vocab to be good at that.
Or just be stoned, okay.
Fair. But I never see cherry kush anymore. So then it was GMO, which I actually didn't know that GMO was garlic, mushroom, onion. That's the abbreviation there, which makes me chuckle a lot. This year, though, I have to say I tried something called Point Break, and it was a cross of Tropicana cookies and Trophy Wife.
Whoa.
That's it. I like chased it around town, this batch that was here. I was like renting a zip car to buy it from some weird dispensary in the suburbs because they were the only ones that still had it left. It was like happy but not sleepy, flavorful but not fruity or citrusy because I don't really like that berry flavor. I fucking loved it. Point Break. Look out for it, y'all.
Well, Lauren, we have another question for you from Milda from Paris. And they ask, any fave stoner TV shows or movies?
There is not enough content catering to women who enjoy weed. But I did love Knocked Up. Knocked Up, like, checked a lot of boxes for me for a long time of, like, a happy, stony-ish comedy. And I liked all the side characters. And I watched that so much when it first came out. But something more recent. Oh, this is probably like 2016, barely recent. But I think it's so good. And I actually rewatched it, I think around last 420, and it holds up. Did y'all catch the time traveling bong trilogy, three part thing they did on, I think it was Comedy Central, but it was like hot off of Broad City. I think when Broad City ended, Ilana and the guy from Broad City, Trey, the funny gym guy, they did this together and they're cousins. And they find a time traveling bong. And it's very in the vein of like Dude, Where's My Car comedy. Totally absurd and funny and spacey. And it's really satisfying. I recommend that for stoner viewing. Oh, my God. OK, this next question is so funny. Katie from LA, I don't know what's going on with you, but I love you. And we're going to need to talk about some of these creative ideas. So she was thinking about packaging and selling smoke, as in someone inhales and then exhales into a jar and quickly closes the lid. Brand it, put a sticker on it. Delta 8 who? Do you like this idea? Lols. Okay, Katie. Does this idea make sense? Not at all. Do I like this idea? Absolutely. Wasn't that girl like selling her farts from on OnlyFans?
Yep.
And selling so many, she like made herself ill. So frankly, if you bottled up weed smoke, you probably would sell it, but you'd get in trouble faster than the fart girl did. Oh my God. And please let us know.
Well, on that note, this wraps up our 420 Hotline special, our inaugural 420 Hotline special. It has been incredible. It's been insightful for both of us. Thank you to everyone who wrote in.
Bong clinks to all of you. Hilarious. Helpful. This was extremely fun, and I want to do it again. We hope you guys have a sweet 420, and we'll be back next month with more weedy weed things. This episode was edited by Jay Nathan. Our music is by Giselle Garcia, and our logo design is by Jennifer Wright. Learn more about Broccoli and subscribe to the magazine at broccolimag.com. Thank you for listening.